is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles. And at a critical time in this country's history, when outrage about the misuse of power leads to reckonings, I am pleased today to report that activism did win out at the University of Maryland. Football players, lawmakers, students, faculty members, influential alumni, even the Maryland governor, all were appalled at the Board of Regents' decision to reinstate football coach DJ Durkin after a player collapsed from heat stroke at an off-season practice and died, which triggered accusations and some evidence that Durkin had been running an abusive program in College Park. So they all pushed back this week with all their might, and they won a stunning reversal. And while it was hypocritical and cowardly of the university to change course after gauging public opinion, why not beforehand, at least this buffoonish Maryland leadership finally figured it out and parted ways with Durkin, with a very wishy-washy leader, retiring President Wallace D. Lowe, flip-flopping in finally determining, quote, the overwhelming majority of stakeholders expressed serious concerns about Coach Durkin returning to the campus, unquote. There was no stronger stakeholder than the father of the late linebacker, Jordan McNair, who was 19 when he fell ill during that intense May practice that was, what, more than 3 months before the season opener? May? These were the words of Marty McNair at a press conference after Durkin initially was reinstated at Maryland.
I feel like I've been punched in the stomach and somebody spit in my face.
What did you think was going to happen when they concluded their investigation?
They would do the right thing.
Not 24 hours later, Durkin was gone, which is something of a shocker given the power of major college football coaches. Maryland players responded with victorious tweets. One said, it's never the wrong time to do what's right. And another said, pressure bursts pipes, doesn't it? And then McNair's father, needless to say, was relieved and thankful that Lowe intervened, removed Durkin, and then took responsibility at long last for cleaning up the program and the athletic department, though athletic director Damon Evans and the Regents somehow stay for now. Here was McNair on ESPN.
Now, I felt that way yesterday just due to the disappointment and the Board of Regents' decision with holding or retain, still keeping Coach Durkin on staff at University of Maryland. I really didn't feel that there was any level of accountability for Jordan's death. And then it just kind of switched over the day. So there was a sense of relief that Dr. Lowe, and I commend Dr. Lowe for making the right decision with insurmountable pressures to do something completely different yesterday. So the sense of relief, not only for my family, but for this team, Jordan's teammates as well.
When you consider the obscene profits available in the big pot for elite programs, such as, say, Alabama, which generated $109 million alone in revenue last year, it's no shock when the football coach is enabled as the most powerful force on a campus, grotesque and disturbing as that may be. For all the rampant concern about the future of a barbaric sport within an evolved society, no progress will be made when a governing university board prioritizes a coach's money-making ability over an environment described by many Maryland players as toxic. filled with the kind of bullying and intimidation we thought football had left behind in the last century. But now maybe the Maryland decision will change the philosophical landscape now that a bully has been put in his place. In this progressive day and age, when lives are protected from predators and bad actors in all walks of society, the football coach must be held accountable when a college player dies on his watch during an unnecessarily hard driving practice, again in May. And while Durkin apparently had big fans among Regents who think he could have had the same success of his mentor, Michigan's Jim Harbaugh, credit the Maryland governor, Larry Hogan, for effecting this quick overturn when he called on the board to reconsider its decision. I'm not sure where Wallace Lowe was all along, but better late than never to get it right. Besides, what recruit in his right mind wants to play for Durkin, especially after several Maryland players, stunned that Durkin was back after it was presumed he'd be fired, walked out of Durkin's first meeting with them on Tuesday? Now, years ago, I have mentioned this in the past, I was centrally involved as a columnist when Northwestern defensive back Rashidi Wheeler dropped dead in Evanston during an off-season practice in sweltering Chicago heat. The school tried to claim Wheeler was using supplements, but clearly the absence of an on-site ambulance during this, again, off-season practice, though a hospital was just blocks away, cost Wheeler his life. The legal battle was draining and disgusting. Northwestern trying to cover its ass the entire time. And as I was writing about this case several nights a week, Wheeler's mother, as incensed as McNair's family is at the moment, would call my home from LA just wanting to talk through her grieving. As a professional, I really couldn't do that, but I'm happy to say Linda Will won the legal case against Northwestern. For the rest of my time in Chicago, I was a hated person at Northwestern. They tried to block press credentials. They were about as unprofessional as can be. It's supposed to be an Ivy League heightened institution, but hey, at the time, with point shaving scandals in football and basketball back then, that place was just as scummy as the rest. Maryland, with interim coach Matt Canada, hits the road Saturday to play Michigan State, the school of convicted molester Dr. Larry Nassar. At least now, Maryland has made that day a little less dark. I don't need to ask what possesses Boston people to hurl full cans of beer at the Red Sox. One of them striking magical manager Alex Cora and drenching him and his daughter, and marring that duck boat parade celebrating a fourth World Series title in 15 years. After all, you know the answer. New England has a monopoly on low forms of humanity, especially drunken young males who listen to creepy talk shows. And if we are banning groups in this country, and I don't like banning groups in this country, I certainly would welcome a ban on this group after the latest civic debacle. At least Cora was not seriously hurt, but ponder this bit of lunacy. What kind of pigs send a barrage of beer cans at baseball heroes who just brought more glory to Boston and New England? Even if done in fun and several players did snag the beers thrown their way, do these people not understand that projectiles could injure somebody seriously? Here was Cora shrugging off the suds, but also admonishing haters about their criticism during the Yankees playoff series.
The New York Yankees, yeah, the sky was falling. You know, we lost game two, and he was panicking here. Everybody was like, whoa, it's over. We scored 16 at Yankee Stadium. Suck on it. And then, for how much I care about those guys in Houston, well, we went to Houston and we swept them down there. And to finish it off, we go to this historic ballpark that holds 55,000 people. I played there for 6 years, and I know how special Dodger Stadium is. And when Steve Pierce hit that home run in game five, it felt like we had 40,000 fans cheering for us at Dodger Stadium. It was an amazing run. It was an amazing year. And you guys make it that special. Thank you very much. Enjoy.
It appears this twisted beer-throwing parade tradition started when Patriots fans whipped beer cans at tough guy Rob Gronkowski. Stupid, but a bit more understandable given the Gronk legend. But the Red Sox literally were dodging flurries of these full beer cans. And after 19-year-old Patrick Connolly, nice future there, Patrick, was charged with assault and battery with a dangerous weapon, disorderly conduct, and underage possession of alcohol, he told the arresting officers, quote, "I love Cora. I didn't mean to hit him," unquote, Patrick Connolly, or at least how I think he sounds. Well, Pat, what exactly were you trying to accomplish there then? My God, there was damage to a World Series trophy aboard one of the duck boats. Veteran Boston Globe photographer Stan Grossfeld had to protect star Mookie Betts and his family in one of the boats by blocking the cans, with Betts saying, quote, "This definitely has got to stop," unquote. The Red Sox oddly tried to play this both ways, with a spokesman saying, quote, "While the beer throwing was unfortunate, we hope those throwing them didn't intend to hurt anybody," unquote. I'm guessing most were guilty of stupidity more than intent to harm. But here in 2018, we're all living it. One never can tell intent. And congratulations to Boston for spoiling its 11th championship parade for its four pro sports teams in this century. Never has a sports town been less deserving. In our chaotic republic, it's still important to sit down and engage in a big, meaty sports event or two. Yes, we have two such escapes this weekend. Some football jambalaya 80 miles apart on the bayou, where LSU hosts Alabama Saturday night in Baton Rouge, and the Saints host the 8-0 Rams in New Orleans. For the sake of variety, who wouldn't love to see number 3 LSU with Coach Ed Ogeron oozing of gumbo and all things Louisiana, alligator, pull the shocker? And make no mistake, Tua Tagovailoa finally will be challenged by an elite secondary that has 14 picks and did shut down Georgia's Jake Fromm and other good quarterbacks. But LSU will suffer because star linebacker Devin White is out for the first half with that targeting suspension. You cannot give Bama an opening such as that. And you can expect the running game to take over behind that offensive line, with Nick Saban throwing waves of talented pounding backs at the Tigers, and of course a little dose of Jalen Hurts here and there. Joe Burrow has played well at quarterback for LSU, but he has only 4 touchdown passes against FBS teams this season, and that offense does struggle at times on third down. You cannot struggle at any time against Bama. The tailgate scene will be insane, of course, but Bama will quiet the noise as usual for the 8th straight time in the series. Alabama 30, LSU 19. Here is Saban, the defense attorney, trying to make LSU's case, when we all know that Saban has beaten 21 top 5 teams, the most of any college coach in history.
You know, time to get back to really focusing on, you know, the challenges of what is basically, you could view as a new season in terms of the teams that we have to play, especially this team that we play this week, who's one of the best teams in the nation. I think they're very elite in a lot of ways in terms of the way they play defense. Their offense is very efficient and really done a great job this year. The quarterback plays well for them. They've got good runners. They've got good receivers. Our record or any other statistic that you guys want to sort of bring up about all this game and all that will not affect the outcome of this game at all.
Now, if LSU loses and Michigan does beat Penn State in the Big House and Notre Dame survives aforementioned Northwestern at Cozy Ryan Field, the college football playoff rankings will fall into place thusly. Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame all locked in. If they win out, the rest of the season with the Michigan-Ohio State winner, assuming that team does win out, getting the fourth spot. Here was Clemson coach Dabo Sweeney making Alabama sound invincible, and maybe Alabama is invincible. Maybe this is Saban's best team ever.
We're just glad to have an opportunity at this point to know that we're still in the hunt. But the reality of it, it's like, you know, back when I was a player, you know, they had kind of the big time bus, and then they had the Roy bus, the rest of y'all, and you know, it's kind of Alabama, and then the rest of y'all. We're just glad to be on the Roy bus right now, and to still have a chance.
If there are hiccups in the CFP hierarchy, Oklahoma is waiting to pounce with Georgia and Washington State on the distant periphery. Would it not be fun to see crazy Mike Leach in the Final Four? Probably not going to happen, but we can dream. Speaking of Oklahoma, Coach Lincoln Riley claims he is not interested in the NFL, but that's a recruiting tactic, folks, though Barry Switzer is trying to talk Riley out of it. Money and the chance to coach his star pupil, Baker Mayfield, makes Riley, in my opinion, a serious candidate for the Cleveland Browns. If he's smart, though, Riley will realize that franchise is the ultimate dead end for coaches and quarterbacks and will wait for the right opportunity to turn loose his air raid passing acumen. Cleveland is a place where good football men go to die, including Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley, and owner Jimmy Haslam is not helping matters.
Well, hopefully we made a big step today. I mean, it's very troubling. It's hard to win in the NFL. If anybody knows that, it's us. And I think the message today is we're not going to put up with internal discord, that we want people who are collaborative and work together.
As for Ohio State, the Buckeyes falling to number 10 in the first rankings. And if they do lose to Michigan in a few weeks, the expectation will be that Urban Meyer retires. It has been a daunting season for the Urban legend, including the Zach Smith fallout. And this week, Meyer revealing he has been dealing with an incurable brain cyst that is not life-threatening, but does cause these excruciating headaches we see him suffering on the sidelines. Meyer, of course, has left college football before because of his health, and that Columbus pressure cooker gets no easier now that Harbaugh and Michigan finally are title competitive. Not only that, Ryan Day is ready to be a head coach somewhere, and Ohio State will not let that co-offensive coordinator get away while Meyer does a farewell tour next year. If this is going to happen, it'll happen in a few weeks. Now, that drama will continue, and despite all the social justice warriors who screamed for his head in August, you do have to give Urban Meyer this. He'll be remembered among the all-time coaching greats, a winner of 3 national titles in an era when Saban was better, but nobody else was better. To the NFL, where the games are more entertaining than ever because offenses are allowed to be more freewheeling and creative than ever. In that vein, we have the multiple weapons of the Rams, whose passing explosions are opened up by the scary bursts of Todd Gurley, and the Saints, who are doing crazy things such as lining up 3 quarterbacks on 1 offensive play and using versatile Taysom Hill for shock value. What we do know is that a coach named Sean is going to win this game on Sunday, and while McVay might be headed to the Super Bowl, Peyton will win this game in the Superdome. The Rams have been just getting by in recent weeks, and as we saw at the end of the Green Bay game when Packers kick returner Ty Montgomery handed the Rams the game and sabotaged Aaron Rodgers by bringing the kick out of the end zone, then fumbling it away. You saw what happened. It led to unnamed team sources suggesting Montgomery did this in spite. Angry that he'd been removed from the game minutes earlier, and this then led to his being shipped away to Baltimore for a 7th-round draft pick. Whatever really happened there, McVay has a much better culture going, obviously, than Mike McCarthy in Green Bay. And don't you think Rodgers would love playing in L.A. for McVay? He lives here in the offseason, even though he's, what, a couple of years older than the head coach? Well, that's not going to happen with Jared Goff here. Goff will exploit a secondary that has problems beyond Marshawn Lattimore, but maybe Rodgers at some point demands a trade elsewhere to force McCarthy out. Meanwhile, the Saints have been winning impressively even without getting much from Drew Brees. This time, they will get plenty from the ageless wonder in a game rather important for potential home field advantage in the NFC title game looking ahead. So I'm going Saints 36, Rams 33. Get your ass in front of the TV set for that. Or your device. Other games that matter. Pittsburgh at Baltimore. Always a mean rivalry. This one is meaningful because each team needs it badly to stay firm in the AFC playoff picture. Forget Le'Veon Bell. The Steelers and their fans firmly are behind his replacement, James Conner. And with Bell forfeiting, what, $6.8 million in his first 8 weeks? And if he doesn't sign by November the 13th, he's not going to be playing this year. Privately, the Steelers don't want him back other than to grab the compensatory draft pick when he signs elsewhere in the offseason. And free of that soap opera, the Steelers take advantage of Joe Flacco's continuing career demise as the Ravens waste a premier defense. Steelers 24, Ravens 16. Green Bay at New England with all the turmoil in Packerland and Rodgers clearly sick of McCarthy. It's not a good time for a Sunday night game in Foxborough, though Rodgers will do his best to make his duel with Tom Brady entertaining. This is the first time Rodgers ever has played at Gillette Stadium, believe it or not, and he can't expect his defense to play as well against Brady as it did against the Rams. Josh Gordon was excused by Bill Belichick for being tardy, which means Hoodie realizes how important Gordon is to Brady, which means Gronk and Gordon and Julian Edelman will have big games. Funny, NBC brought in Michael Jordan to do a promo for Brady versus Rodgers, and LeBron James, silly man that he is, actually thought Jordan was issuing him a challenge. Fix your basketball team, LeBron. Sit down, LeBron. Here's Michael Jordan, who doesn't often come out and pitch sports events or really come out and say much of anything these days.
A lot of talk going on these days about who is the greatest ever, about who has the titles, the raw talent, the most clutch moments. I get it. It's a tough call. I mean, even the jersey numbers are the same. But maybe the best way to settle this debate is to play it out head to head. I'll watch that.
I'm going to take Patriots 34, Packers 24. And Rodgers, despite his magical moments and clutch memories, does need at least two titles to be in the Brady conversation. So sorry for anybody who actually thinks this is about the greatest of all time. If we're going to do that debate, it's going to be Brady versus Joe Montana. And Brady already has resolved that. And Peyton Manning, yeah, I love those Kenny Chesney commercials. Just a little too many of them. Marriott aside, when Peyton Manning does an ad campaign, he always orders up, I don't know if this is in his contract or if it's nationwide insurance, but way too much. Heavy rotation. Super heavy rotation. Tired of it. I have seen so much of Peyton and Kenny Chesney that I almost didn't include him in this conversation. I am so sick of Peyton in those commercials. I am almost ready to say he's not one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, but he doesn't even fit into this conversation because he lost too many. LA Chargers at Seattle. The Chargers are playing well enough that some think both LA teams could be in the Super Bowl, though much of LA isn't even aware that LA has one NFL team, much less two. Russell Wilson never has lost to an AFC team in Seattle, and while he does have a running game and he is ably protected by a revived line, old man Rivers, Phillip, may be in for a special run this season, even in the rugged AFC. Chargers 26, Seahawks 20. Atlanta at Washington. I mention this game only because the 5-2 Redskins are not real. Haha, Clinton Dix needs time to acclimate, and I am forecasting Washington's comeuppance. Falcons 19, Redskins 17. As for the trade deadline, there were no blockbusters. All of those were in the weeks and months before, but Demaryius Thomas to the Texans could bear big dividends for Deshaun Watson. Golden Tate might be better for the Eagles at a cheaper price than Amari Cooper is for the Cowboys. And the Rams will get a boost from pass rusher Dante Fowler. And the loser? No activity from the Jags at quarterback, meaning they are stuck with alliteration time. Five times. Say it. Brutal Blake Bortles. Brutal Blake Bortles. Brutal Blake Bortles, brutal Blake Bortles, brutal Blake Bortles. With three-point mania and a relentless offensive pace turning the NBA into playground ball this season, the Warriors look even more invincible than ever. I know, boy, you're excited about that. We're seeing amazing performances become the norm, including the record 14 three-pointers of Klay Thompson, the 50% three-point shooting of Steph Curry, and your humdrum 41 dropped in by Kevin Durant, with Curry and Thompson both cracking 50 in abbreviated minutes. So what still could break up the champs? Draymond Green, amid all of this offensive madness, winning another Defensive Player of the Year award. That's right. If he wins, Green becomes eligible for a Supermax extension, this is written into the contract, this summer that would pay $235 million over 5 years starting in 2020. Draymond Green making $235 million. With Curry at $205 million, Durant positioned around $230, $235 million if he does stay, and Klay wanting a raise into nine figures next summer. There's no way the band stays together if Green is making more than all of them. So I think the Warriors, as much as they would like to keep this band together, would likely trade Green if he does win this award this season. I know it's all screwy, but those awards are important, and that's the reason media people shouldn't be voting on them, because Mariotti aside, a potential for conflict of interest, if you know Draymond or don't like Draymond or love Draymond, you could be voting with your heart, and that's grounds for dismissal, and you're talking about $235 million here. No way media should be voting on this stuff, a Mariotti aside. So as I was saying, there's no way the band stays together if he's making more than all of them. I think they would trade Green at some point. And if Durant were to leave, suddenly that dynasty is weakened. And if Durant does leave, would they keep Green at $235 million? I don't think so. The point here is Draymond is urgently important to everything that team does, especially in regard to defense and leadership. But he is not a $235 million athlete, though the contract would demand that amount. Green, who says he wants to become a billionaire by age 40, is not hiding his desire to win that Defensive Player of the Year award.
Is the Defensive Player of the Year award something that, you know, you're chasing again?
Yeah,
this
I need
year?
That.
You need that. Huh?
I need that bad.
How bad?
Real bad. I made second team all defense last year. I'm pissed about that still. And I'll be pissed until I write that. So that's a serious goal of mine this year. And I'm on it every night. So, yeah. Absolutely. I'm pissed. Second team all defense, that's disrespectful.
The awkward stalemate between Jimmy Butler and the Timberwolves has not changed. He still wants out. They still haven't traded him. And now to protect his body from wear and tear, he is sitting out games. But rising above the Butler mess to remind us about heart and perseverance was former league MVP Derrick Rose, who scored 50, career high, as a flashback to his glory days that were interrupted by chronic knee injuries, various surgeries. Great scene the other night in Minneapolis where those fans deserve this. Rose broke down and cried after his performance, the latest 50-point or more game in a league now geared more than ever to high pace and offense. Here was Rose.
Derek.
Rose!
You can see you're very emotional. A huge victory for this team, and it comes from you and your career high 50 points. What does it mean to you, Derek?
Man, everything, man. I work my ass off, bro. I wouldn't have did this for the franchise, the organization, the fans, everybody, man. I wouldn't be able to play the way I play, man.
A Mariotti aside, when I was a columnist in Chicago, our newspaper, which was trying to capture the North Shore affluent readership, decided to do a diary with a hotshot basketball player named John Shire, who ended up playing for Krzyzewski at Duke. Shire was from the rich suburbs north of Chicago. I show up at a gym to watch some Saturday high school basketball involving Michael Jordan's sons. Okay? I went to write about that. And somebody I know in the AAU program elbows me and goes, why aren't you guys doing diaries with Derrick Rose? And I said, pardon me, who is Derrick Rose? And they said, watch him in the next game. So I stuck around that gym and watched Derrick Rose, as I believe a sophomore in high school, light it up. And I went back to the editors and said, I think we need to do a Derrick Rose diary. And that never happened. Why not? Wouldn't the readers in Derrick Rose's part of town want to read about him too? Mariotti aside, and what I just said is horrible, but welcome to Chicago, folks. It's not funny either. That's a disgusted laugh. A Mariotti aside. The Butler saga is not fair to the Minnesota fans or to the team, and the Wolves are not going to win this battle, so Tom Thibodeau should just trade Butler to Houston or Miami or Philly or the Clippers and be done with this mess. I mean, what? Houston's offer of 4 first-rounders is not good enough? Think of the fans, Tibbs. As for LeBron, the Lakers are no better than a year ago, at least not yet, with the kids not engaged on D. LeBron's not engaged on D. And this team goes soft at the end of games, nearly blowing a 19-point lead at home to Dallas. LeBron missing one free throw at the end before nailing the other. And I have a question. Lonzo Ball, where's your loudmouth father right now? Where is he? Embalmed in Lithuania? Where is the guy? I mean, I actually might want to hear from LeVar Ball right now. Maybe that's what they need. No, I did not say that. Wash out my mouth. Again, it's still early. And James is claiming somehow that he's, quote, extremely happy we're going through this experience, quote. What kind of a justification is that? Anyway, this is where I have a problem with the King and all of these ridiculous Michael Jordan comparisons. When Jordan always made everybody around him better, James clearly has not and hasn't done that this year. We've seen players in LeBron's career regress or stagnate around him. And again, it might be too early to say it's happening again, but there's loads of talent on this team, and it's too easy to simply hang the problems on Coach Luke Walton, though he will be the fall guy if this losing continues. Here was James before that victory against Dallas, issuing a warning to the media about his moods. And keep in mind, he showed up at Staples Center dressed as Jason from the Friday the 13th movies.
Well, we got to get better. We know that. We talk about patience, but, you know, we can't have reoccurrence of the same thing. I think, doing the same things over and over and over and expecting a different result, then, you know, that's insanity. So, you know, we have to continue. We have to get better. You know, we can't keep having the same mistakes over and over.
LeBron, you've been preaching patience this whole year. At what point does that patience run out, and what do you look like as a leader when your patience does run out?
You probably don't want to be around when my patience run out. I'm serious.
LeBron's former team, the Cavs, could lose 60 or 70 games this season, and it's no wonder interim coach Larry Drew demanded security before agreeing to take on this debacle full-time. I'm going to give LeBron until the new year before declaring the Lakers a crisis zone, but right now the following teams in the West are better than LA. Better than the Lakers, I should say. Warriors, Jazz, Nuggets, Thunder, Trailblazers, Pelicans, Rockets, and dare I say Clippers and Kings? That makes the Lakers number 10. That puts them out of the playoffs. LeBron hasn't been out of the playoffs since 2005. If LeBron loses at Sacramento next week, how nasty will it get around here? And how much will ticket prices on the secondary market plunge? And it's fair to ask this in the current defense optional climate of the NBA. If somebody is going to be going off for 70 or 80 points, one team that could allow that outbreak, don't you think? The Houston Rockets. They started 1-5. They don't play D anymore. And what did they expect when Trevor Ariza and Luke Mbamute were sent away and Carmelo the Matador Anthony replaced them? Clayton Kershaw wants to remain a Dodger, and that still could happen as the World Series losers agreed to extend his deadline to opt out of his current deal and test the free agent market. This is risky business for the Dodgers. Should they extend beyond the 2 years and $65 million left on his contract and commit $100 million or more with so many red flags here? Chronic back issues, a decline in velocity and command, too much wear and tear on the once golden left-armed. I wouldn't do it. Important as Kershaw is to the franchise in terms of leadership and legacy, he has not won the World Series. He has faltered in the postseason, and I think his best work is behind him. I do not believe he deserves a nine-figure extension. Maybe somebody else, his hometown Texas Rangers, would do it. I don't think the Dodgers should do it. They should invest that somewhere else in pitching. Now that the Dodgers' pitching future belongs to Walker Buehler, I think a change of scenery would be best for all in regard to Kershaw. It's perplexing and sad that Kershaw, the greatest regular season pitcher in baseball history, has stumbled so often in October. He apparently wants to keep trying in LA, not elsewhere. And don't weep for the Dodgers here. They do have the money if they want to pay him, but they had better keep spending it way over that $197 million threshold, the one they obeyed last offseason, as they retool for more October runs. It is incumbent upon all MLB franchises that toyed with the financial system last offseason, waiting months to sign top free agents and leaving some of them shortchanged, to act in good faith this time around. This is the class they were waiting for, a bit more diluted than they thought, but Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, possibly Kershaw, and anything less than $350 million offers for Harper and Machado, even though each has flaws, will cause even more consternation from a Players Association counting down the days to a 2021 work stoppage. The Dodgers need a star and an offensive anchor in the everyday lineup, and Bryce Harper would bring the perfect flair and the perfect hair to LA, not far from his native Vegas. But there's a sense out there in baseball that the Cubs, whose title window is starting to close, will be rolling out the money for Bryce, who would be the life of the Wrigleyville party, and he did grow up with Cubs star Chris Bryant in Vegas. If Harper is a warm weather guy, he'll pick the Dodgers. If he wants to win the World Series, he will pick the Cubs. Machado can be penciled in right now for the Yankees unless the Red Sox, once they dry off, try to flip Xander Bogaerts to get Machado, which I doubt given Manny's hated status in New England. If those fans are throwing beers at Alex Cora, what the hell would they throw at Manny Machado in a World Series parade? Nobody should be surprised if the Giants shop Madison Bumgarner and the Diamondbacks shop Paul Goldschmidt. The baseball world mourns the loss of Willie McCovey, the beloved Giant slugger, best known not for a cove in right field, though it has become a precious part of baseball Americana, but for his big bat and his Giant-sized heart. McCovey was 80, and with Willie Mays, he helped popularize baseball in the 60s and 70s when the Giants were a fledgling franchise in San Francisco. Again, Willie McCovey was 80 years old. And ratings for the World Series were down, which should continue to flummox MLB, considering the blue blood status and market sizes of Boston and LA. Only the delusional at this point would say baseball is in good shape in the matter of public interest and popularity. And the Mets became the latest sports franchise to appoint a player agent to lead their front office, bringing in Brody Van Wagenen to lead their sorry-ass mess. No less an authority than USA Today baseball writer Bob Nightingale, who I think is the best out there, called it the strangest general manager hire in baseball history, saying Van Wagenen never has worked a single day in a front office in his life, and that is true. But I must say this to Mr. Nightingale, Bob Myers of the Warriors never worked a day in his life in a basketball front office, and you have seen what has happened since Myers showed up with Golden State. Baseball, though, I believe, a much more complex and different creature than basketball. You're dealing with farm systems, and I know the NBA has its farm system, but it's not nearly as elaborate in terms of signing young players and cultivating them. It's a deeper and much more complicated job for Brody Van Wagenen than Bob Myers has had in Golden State. Not to take away one bit from what Bob has accomplished with Steve Kerr. He hired Steve Kerr, okay? Bob Myers helped draft Draymond in the second round. Bob Myers helped pinpoint Klay Thompson. Bob Myers made the trade for Iguodala. Bob Myers helped recruit Kevin Durant, okay? Create the culture, Bob Myers. That doesn't mean Van Wagenen is going to replicate, especially with an organization with real weak ownership. Only last year, Van Wagenen was accusing MLB owners of collusion, and he was right. Now he has crossed over to the other side, and immediately he encounters the tricky situation of his former client, Mets pitching ace Jacob DeGrom, and whether to empty the bank for the presumptive Cy Young Award winner or trade him and start over with kids. And funny how Van Wagenen seemed to waffle on that.
Brody, Bruce Beck, WNBC TV. You said in July the Mets should either trade DeGrom or give him a contract. Now that you are the Mets, how will you handle DeGrom's contract situation?
Sure. Didn't expect that question today. So Jacob DeGrom clearly has established himself as the best pitcher in baseball. Hopefully in a couple of weeks he'll be awarded with that trophy. As I said earlier, I think that you want to try to identify the best players and you want to keep them for as long as possible. And if our vision and direction does not intend to include a long, sustainable winning team, then you have to consider moving players. But make no mistake, I believe Jacob DeGrom is an incredible talent, and I hope to keep him for a long time.
Okay, word to the wise, Brody. With the Braves and the Phillies positioned to win for quite a long time, you do not want to do a teardown in New York with the Yankees across town in championship mode. That is a sure way to crawl back to CAA over here in Century City in 3 or 4 years, if not sooner. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, would you mind psychoanalyzing why Boston sports fans, also known as mass holes, would hurl a barrage of full beer cans at Red Sox players after they have won yet another World Series? I realize this is a tradition up there, but it is pretty stupid and dangerous and speaks rather disturbingly of what I call the Barstool Sports dipshit culture.
Well, Jay, I'm not a Boston sports fan, so I couldn't exactly tell you what would possess somebody to throw a full beer at somebody you actually like. Don't do it anyway, because you really hurt somebody, but that just really chalks up your whole mass hole theory. So come on, Boston. Come on. Stop reading Barstool and throwing cans at people. That's no good, guys. You won the World Series. Be happy.
And, Chris, did Maryland finally end up making the right call on football coach DJ Durkin? In this case, the students and the players and the lawmakers ran the asylum at the end, and they won out. Do you agree with them that Durkin must be held accountable for a toxic culture and the death of a player on a practice field back in May? May.
Jay, it was a toxic culture. Bad stuff was going on. A player dies. Whether you want to hold them accountable or not, whether you really believe that in your heart, if you're a fan, if you're just somebody like us with an observation on this, somebody's got to be held accountable, and that's always going to happen. So, yeah, I think the right call was made.
And, Chris, your favorite ball player, as stated on this show, is Bryce Harper. You have said you like his hair. Make the case, Chris, of why he and Scott Boras should take that hair to Dodger Stadium and not to Wrigley Field. And, Chris, if Clayton Kershaw returns to the Dodgers, will you be happy or aggravated?
Jay, I love Bryce Harper, and I love Bryce Harper so much I'll give him some advice. Do not come to the Dodgers if Dave Roberts is still the manager, if Clayton Kershaw is given a huge deal, although I don't think it'll be huge, but if he really shouldn't be given any deal at all. So to answer your other question, no, I'm not happy that Clayton Kershaw's given a new deal. If he wanted to opt in for the same, I guess there was nothing we could really do. But to opt out and potentially be cutting a new deal after his performance is disgraceful to baseball. It's why baseball's screwed up. It's why the Dodgers are screwed up. So if I was Bryce, I'd go to the Cubs. At least they won a World Series in the last 30 years. The Dodgers are effed up right now. And if I'm Bryce Harper, I demand a new manager at least.
Okay, thank you, Chris, which leads us to our final segment, Quickies, which are just that quick. When I moved here to Santa Monica, I lived in a building with a 12th floor oceanfront view. Little did I know that a few blocks away, near one of my favorite restaurants, the FBI's most wanted fugitive, post Bin Laden, was living in a modest apartment in a 1960s building, posing on the lam with his girlfriend as Midwest retirees Charlie and Carol Gasco, when his name actually was Whitey Bulger, an infamous Boston gangster. In 2011, when I had just moved here, a former beauty queen, Miss Iceland, 1974, was getting her hair done in a local salon. She's watching a TV show. She recognizes images of a woman on one of those most wanted shows, a woman who had gotten her hair done in that very salon, Carol Gasco, or Catherine Gregg, Whitey Bulger's girlfriend. That led to a quick arrest right down the street from where I lived, on Ocean Avenue. And this week, Whitey Bulger was found dead in a West Virginia penitentiary, the victim of a beatdown allegedly executed by an ex-mafia hitman. If you don't think the mob, many mobs actually, still don't exist in this divided nation of ours, you would be a fool. R.I.H. Whitey Bulger, rot in hell. And I am shocked, shocked, that Oakland A's billionaire owner John Fisher finally got around to extending the contract of his brilliant manager, Bob Melvin, along with the deals of movie star baseball boss Billy Beane and GM David Forst. With the Warriors and Raiders leaving town, the A's do have a chance to create their own fortress in the East Bay, but ad infinitum on this, they need a new ballpark. They need a new ballpark. They need a new ballpark. And the longer they go without one, the less likely many fans are showing up at the Coliseum unless they are allowed in for free again. The opportunity is there for the A's to become a happening again now that the Giants are losing and no longer selling out AT&T Park. Let's see if Fisher maximizes his executive investments by getting aggressive on the ballpark front. And this will be very quick. Disgraced college coach Rick Pitino wants to resurface in the NBA. Rick, you have a better chance of winning the Man of the Year award. And Detroit Lions coach Matt Patricia, having an up-and-down rookie season, now is ordering media people to have better posture. Here was Patricia admonishing a reporter.
Why do you think this move makes your franchise better? Well, you know, too many favors. Just kind of sit up and just like have a little respect for the class. Every day you come and ask me questions, and you just kind of like, you know, give me this. But I mean, just be a little respectful.
Okay,
process,
that's fine.
So ask me a question professionally, and I'll answer.
Okay, why do you feel like this move makes your franchise better?
All right, well, I think, you know, what's important for us when we evaluate, you know, everything that we do as a franchise, I think there's certain value that we can get at times during the season that will help us long term. And we obviously have faith and confidence in the people that are on this team right now.
Now, if I were that reporter, I'd have told Patricia that I will sit up in my seat as long as he removes that stupid pencil from his ear and maybe shave that grizzly beard. Actually, I think the slumped down reporter is a better look than Patricia with the pencil and the beard. And for the millions of problem gamblers in America whose mental health and financial wherewithal are threatened by legalized sports gambling, here is Exhibit A of why you should stop wagering. Todd Gurley, not wanting to give Rodgers and the Packers more time to mount a comeback last Sunday, allowed himself to be tackled purposely instead of running in for an easy touchdown in the final minute. That impacted the point spread, the over-under total, the fantasy points, and it had many a grown man and woman crying. Gurley is not apologizing. Thank you, Todd, for saying this.
Forget fantasy and forget Vegas today. We got the win, so that's all that matters.
They should hang Gurley's words in every casino, betting shop, sports book in America. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never ever let anybody mute you in life.
I am still living with your ghost. Lonely and dreaming of the West Coast. I don't want to be your downtown. I don't want to be your stupid game. With my big black boots and an old suitcase, I do believe I'll find myself a new